Ready to begin. Wanted to welcome everyone joining us. I see there's some people that haven't joined us in the past couple of weeks. This is the sixth shiur in a series of shiurim on topics regarding Eretz Yisrael and halachic issues that have arisen in the last 60 years of the independence of the state of Israel. And this is in honor of course, the 60th anniversary of the upcoming 60th anniversary of the establishment of the state that we're going to be celebrating this coming Yom HaTzmaut, coming up in May. And I wanted to thank all of you for coming and congratulate Yishkach to Rabbi Kelman and to all the people who make Torah Motion possible, the supporters, the technical support. Big Yishkach to all of you to make this incredible Kiddush Hashem happen. And tonight we're going to be speaking about an incredibly interesting issue, and the implications are mind-blowing, and that is that although Mashiach hasn't come, is it possible to say that this year we can bring a Korban Pesach? Even the Mashiach will not come before before Pesach. Even if that happens, is there some way that we can still bring the Korban Pesach? And we'll describe the debate that's been going back and forth over the past 100, 200 years about this very, very important topic. And just as a matter of introduction, just to note that the centrality of the Beit HaMikdash in Torah thought, and from our Bureau of Statistics, it's an unbelievable statistic that approximately one-third of the mitzvot in the Torah, positive mitzvot in the Torah, are connected with the Beit HaMikdash. And if you count also the mitzvah that connect to Kohanim, Kahuna, and Tuman Tahara, which are also very much connected to the Beit HaMikdash, then you have, it adds up to approximately half of the Torah's positive mitzvot. So the Beit HaMikdash is no doubt a central aspect of Torah life. And its absence is very painful. And there's some way that we can renew the building of the Beit HaMikdash or offering Karbanot even without the absence of the Mashiach. And this became a very relevant issue, became on the front burner in Jewish life. It was raised in the mid-19th century by a very interesting Rav at that time. His name was Ritzvi Herskalischer. And he was one of the early religious Zionists. He's also very much enthused with the idea that there's somehow that we should be able to bring a carbon, should be able to bring carbonos to the Zmanazah. And his suggestions and writings on this topic engendered a very interesting and tremendous literature back and forth about this important topic. And it's interesting that in the Sefer Kaftar Beferach, which teaches us many aspects about Eretz Yisrael, tells us that the Rishon, the medieval authority, Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, who's fairly prominent, already in 1257, is reported that he wanted to visit Yerushalayim to build, to offer Karbonot in the Beit HaMikdash. It's rather remarkable. So the question is there any way that we can make this happen? Now, as I finish each section, I will open up to questions and comments that I'll be thrilled to respond to as best as I can. Any comments, thoughts? Okay. All right, let's go ahead. We're going to discuss five possible impediments to rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash on our own. First of all, the Sefer HaChinuch writes, and this is a classic that's been raised by those who discuss this topic over the last 100 or so years, the Sefer HaChinuch writes in Mitzvah Tzadihei that the mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash applies only when the majority of Jews reside in Eretz Yisrael. And the argument goes, well, if we don't have a majority of Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael, then we don't have any mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash. But it's not so simple, though, for a few reasons. First of all, is that, look at Bayit Sheni. We built the second Beit HaMikdash, even though, unfortunately, at the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, the majority of Jews did not live in Eretz Yisrael. It's rather remarkable that we still had that mitzvah, you know, seems to be going against the Sefer HaChinuch. So various solutions have been offered saying that the fact is that we were able to build the Beit HaMikdash because the Jews were given the right by the Persian Empire to return to Eretz Yisrael. Just the fact that the potential for a majority of Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael is sufficient to create a mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash, and with the establishment of the State of Israel, some wanted to argue perhaps we have the mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash since we have a potential for a majority of Jews residing in Eretz Yisrael. But an even more tantalizing fact that has risen in the past, that's emerging, and maybe certainly going to be emerging within the next few decades, but maybe even relevant today, and that is that it's, we are very close to the day, and if it's not already, that a majority of Jews will be residing in Eretz Yisrael. And this is a remarkable statistic. The last time the majority of Jews resided in Eretz Yisrael was the time when Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, of Ashur, came and exiled the 10 tribes to Assyria. It's remarkable that we haven't had it in 2,600 years, and it looks like in our time they already have it. And some would claim, if you only count those Jews who are Jews as defined by Halacha, as according to the Halacha, we already have such a majority of Jews residing in Eretz Yisrael. So maybe, according to Sefer HaChinuch, this mitzvah to build the Beit HaMikdash already applies or will apply already starting in 20 years. Okay, that's the first issue. Now let's go to the second concern that may hold back our ability to build the Beit HaMikdash in our time. And that is Rashi and Tosos to Masechta Sukkah and Daf Memalef Amud Aleph quote a very interesting midrash that says that the third Beit HaMikdash will descend from Shamayim. Will descend from the heavens. The human hands are not going to build it. So it would seem that how can we build the Beit HaMikdash? Is that would seem to be the job of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The only thing is that the Rambam doesn't seem to support it. The Rambam writes that the Mashiach is going to be building the Beit HaMikdash, which sounds like it will be built by human hands. So it seems against Rashi and Tosfot, but nevertheless, according to Rashi and Tosfot, it would seem we certainly are not in the position to build the Beit HaMikdash. And Rav Bleich from Yeshiva University has suggested that if you look at the Nachem Tefillah that we recite on Tisha B'Av, it would seem to be that this Tefillah is following the opinion of Rashi and Tosfos. This is what Nachem says. The Tefillah of Nachem, we say, Ki Atah Hashem Be'eti Tzatav, that you were the one that set the Beit HaMikdash on fire. In the future, you will again rebuild the Beit HaMikdash with fire. So what is it saying? That Atah Livnotah, you are the one who's going to build doing it. That's what seems to be in the Tefillah of Nachem. However, one perhaps can say that what the Tefillah means, that Hashem will be the cause of the Beit HaMikdash, that He will bring about the circumstances where we will be the ones who will be building the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Interesting. He will enable us to do it, but we will be the ones actually building it. Right? One possible way of understanding the Nachem Tefillah, so that it does not necessarily have to fit with the opinion of Rashi and Tosfot. Okay. So, two concerns. Majority of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. Second concern, does Hashem build the Beit HaMikdash? The third concern, the Rambam that we just cited, writes that the Beit HaMikdash will be built by the Mashiach. So he writes towards the end of the Mishnah Torah, in Perek Yudaf Halacha Aleph. And so it would seem that it's not our job to build the Beit HaMikdash, it's the Mashiach's job to build the Beit HaMikdash. In fact, I had a conversation with Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. I used to help him go to the airport every week from YU, and we had conversations about different topics. And then one week I happened to ask him about what his opinion about building the Beit HaMikdash in our time. See, his instantaneously reacted according to the Rambam. The Rambam says that the Mashiach is going to be building the Beit HaMikdash. This is not our job. The only thing is that the Talmud Yerushalmi in Matzah Sheni Perakei Chelak Beis, the Yerushalmi writes that Mishnah Beis, around commenting to Mishnah Beis, the Yerushalmi comments that the Beit HaMikdash will be built before the Mashiach comes. So it would seem against the Rambam. But the only thing is that the Bavli, our Talmud, the Talmud of Bavli, the one that we consider to be a little bit more authoritative than the Yerushalmi, seems to support the Rambam. Rambam seems to get a source in the Bavli. Because the Bavli explains the order of our Shmona Esrei. The Shmona Esrei reflects the historical order that the Mashiach will arrive. The Gemara explains, we say the Gemara, we daven for Kibbutz Kol Yot, the ingathering of the exiles, in the 10th bracha of Shmona Esrei, and in that, because first the step will be Mekabes Yidchei Amo Yisrael, that the exiles will be ingathered. Then we daven, a few brachot later, we daven for the building of Yerushalayim, then Yerushalayim will be built. Then the Mashiach will come. And only then do we start davening for the Avodah. But say, Kashem Elokim Tzviel Sav Hashem Savodol Yid Bivei Tzecha. The service in the Beit HaMikdash. So it seems that the service in the Beit HaMikdash, Karbanah, will come only after Etzemach Davena Amdecha. Only after the Mashiach will come will we have the Beit HaMikdash. So it seems from the Shmona Esrei, the Gemara Megillah, and this is what the Rambam follows. Now, another a fourth reason to suggest would be a little bit of a problem to build the Beit HaMikdash in our time, is that the Torah in Parashat Re'eh provides for us a roadmap of how we're supposed to be, when we will build the Beit HaMikdash. And a psukim teaches as follows. Pasuk tells us that we will cross into the Yarden, we'll cross into Eretz Yisrael, we'll live in the land, and then if Hashem will relieve us from all of our enemies surrounding us, and we'll live securely in Eretz Yisrael, then only after we've achieved stability, then we're able to build the Beit HaMikdash. So we see that it seems to be that today that we do not have stability. Unfortunately, the hundreds of millions of our Arab neighbors are not very at peace with us, and that would seem to be we have not reached our eligibility for building the Beit HaMikdash. And in fact, the story is told that after the 1967 war, when the Har HaBayit, when the Temple Mount was in our control, and then the tantalizing possibility of, well, no, do we have to build the Beit HaMikdash? Somebody posed this question to Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Soloveitchik responded that we have, look, we're still not free of our enemies, but that's, unfortunately, we're still suffering from our neighbors, and from our Arab neighbors, and therefore we are not eligible, we have not reached the point in which we can build the Beit HaMikdash. Fourth problem with building Beit HaMikdash before the rock of the Mashiach is that David HaMelech is described in Sefer Divrei Yamin, which is the remarkable Sefer Divrei Yamin in the Tanakh, who describes at length the efforts that David HaMelech made to build the Beit HaMikdash. And it describes how every single thing that David HaMelech did, he did with instruction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me just get the pasuk for you. The pasuk reads as follows. He says that HaKol Bichtav Mi'ad Hashem Alai Yizkil. Everything from Hashem. You need prophetic guidance. And even in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, David did not build the Beit HaMikdash until he asked Nathan. David HaMelech, his whole life, he wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. Shifti v'Beit Hashem kol yimei chayei. That's Achat Shalti Me'et Hashem. That's what David HaMelech aspired to so much. Was his ultimate goal. But before he built it, he asked Nathan HaNavi. And Hashem told Nathan the Navi, no Beit HaMikdash until your son Shlomo. Similarly, in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, it was the Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. They were the ones that were pushing for the building rebuilding of the second Beit HaMikdash. It was through prophetic direction. And in the absence of Nevuah today, it would seem to preclude building the Beit HaMikdash. However, those minority Rabbanim who believe in building the Beit HaMikdash today will point to the Ramban. The Ramban makes a remarkable comment in Parshat Korach, Tractate Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Ramban, believe it or not, he faults Am Yisrael for failing to build the Beit HaMikdash during the time period of Sefer Shoftim. Unbelievable. And he even says that even the Beit HaMikdash could have been built in the time of David HaMelech. The problem was with David HaMelech is that only David himself wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. If the whole of all of Am Yisrael would have supported David HaMelech, and it wasn't just that he was going on his own, he would have been allowed to build the Beit HaMikdash. Isn't that a remarkable statement by the Ramban? Perhaps he's supported by Haggai. Haggai and Navi, if you read, it's fascinating. Haggai starts off by saying that he was upset that the Jews are not building the second Beit HaMikdash. The Jews were saying that, it's not the time to build the Beit HaMikdash. So perhaps he's arguing that we have to take the initiative and build the Beit HaMikdash, even though it seems that we don't have an obligation, but we should have volunteer. We should very much desire to build the Beit HaMikdash. On the other hand, the advantage of the Jews in the time of Bayit Sheni is they have Haggai, who was a Navi, so we can know it's the time to build the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, so we've now just discussed broader hashkafic impediments to building the Beit HaMikdash. What I'd like to, after I allow an opportunity to hear for your comments or thoughts and questions, I would, afterwards we're going to start getting into some of the nitty-gritty issues regarding halakhic, possible halakhic impediments to rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash before the arrival of the Mashiach and the renewal of prophecy. Anybody, any questions, comments? Yes, Mr. Weinstein. Oh, okay, that's an interesting question. How do we know that the need for peace part of the building is not just, right, it's a mitzvah d'oro, maybe it was a directive for David HaMelech. Right, but once the Beit HaMikdash is built, that's not a bad point. You maybe could say that. It's not the way Rav Soloveitchik learned, but maybe you could say that. Maybe you could say that that's why we were able to build the Beit HaMikdash, even though we were not at peace. We were struggling to build the Beit HaMikdash. The Shomronim were contesting, strongly, vigorously contesting the building of the Beit HaMikdash. So that's very possible, suggestion. I like that a lot. What about a Navi's direction? How do we know we need a Navi's direction? It's a good point. We'll discuss it a little bit more. But the fact that we had it in the time of Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni, and David HaMelech describes everything he did was from a Navi. Maybe that's established as a requirement. You need a Navi to build a Beit HaMikdash. But you're right. We're not locked into that. Perhaps one could say that you use the best source that you have. If you have a Navi, great. If you don't have a Navi, you get the best Talmidei Chachamim to come and make decisions about how to build the Beit HaMikdash. Right, Mr. Weinstein and Shukav, very, very good points. Okay, let's start getting into some of the nitty-gritty here. Offering Karbonot in the state of Tuma. So one can ask, how in the world can we bring Karbonot to today? We're all Tame. We don't have ashes of the Paraduma. Almost all of us have gone, except hopefully for the Kohanim, that they have not been to a funeral. So we're all Tamei mate, more or less, basically. So how in the world, David making a good point. How in the world can we build the Beit HaMikdash if we are Tamei? How can we offer Karbonot if we are Tamei? The answer is that there's a rule called Tuma Hushra or Dechuyav Tzibur, which means that if the majority of Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, are Tamei, are ritually impure, then the Karbonot can be brought even by Kohanim who are ritually impure, who are Tameim. In other words, that the restriction of bringing a Karbonot when we are Tamei is waived if the majority of the Jewish people are impure. Now, this only applies to communal Karbonot, a Karbonot that we're obligated to bring, such as the Karbon Pesach. So it's not, doesn't, over, so we can't, cannot offer voluntary Karbonot bitum'ah, but certainly many Karbonot, such as the Karbon Pesach, we can bring even bitum'ah, even if we don't have Kohanim who are Tahor, and individuals who are Tahor. So that's a rather remarkable point. Okay. Before we go on to the next section, I just wanted to field what David from Brooklyn pointed out nicely, that the Gemara Bava teaches on Daf Yud Beis, that Chacham Adas Min Adif Min Avi, that a Talmid Chacham is greater priority than a Navi, is more prominent than a Navi. So if a Navi could offer guidance how to build the Beit HaMikdash, how much kavah chomer, how much more so that a chacham should, a talmid chacham should be able to decide what's the whether it's the right time, whether it's proper to bring it. Which talmid chachamim would tell us how to build a bein midrash? Charedi, dati, lumli, sfaradi. Okay, I hear what you're saying. That's a good comment. At least it was a memory of the Bayi Rishon. Nice. That's cute. Rav Goran, right. Rav Goran was very much focused on the Beit HaMikdash, right. Very good. My answer, okay, my personal feeling is all the different Shvatim, all the tribes will be represented in deciding who to build the Beit HaMikdash. The Charedi, Dati, Lumi, Sfaradi, Temani, will all be there chipping in. The Talmid Chacham will decide, the top Talmid Chacham will all be unified at that point, will be Am Echad, Talev Echad, to build the Beit HaMikdash to decide. Okay, good. Alright, let's, then we'll be ready for the Beit HaMikdash. In the Yimot HaMashiach, but today. Okay, well, maybe that's an impediment to the Mashiach. Maybe we have to all respect one another. Okay, let's continue now with another impediment. Another possible impediment to offering carbonon and building the Beit HaMikdash. We all know that to offer a carbon you need kohanim from the step of Kabbalah Adam, of the receiving of the dam, of the blood of the animal that's been shefted, you have to have a kohen. The Zrikas Adam, throwing of the blood, the offering of the putting the meat on the mizbeach, it has to be the animals, that has to all be done by a kohen. So do we have kohanim today that could do it? So here's an interesting distinction that the halacha makes. The halacha categorizes two kohanim into two different groups. Kohanim yuchasim, kohanim who can trace their lineage back to someone who actually did the avodah, the service, performed the service in the Beit HaMikdash by Sheni, right? Or certainly by Rishon. And any Kohanim cannot do that, but just the Kohanim, by virtue of family tradition, is considered to be Kohanim Chazaka. So the rule is that you can, the Beit HaMikdash, you have to be a Kohanim Yuchas to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. Now, we would, normally the way you would think is, well, how are we going to have, if today we do not have Kohanim Yuchasim, so how would they serve in the Beit HaMikdash? The answer to that would seem that when the Mashiach comes, when Eliyahu comes, he will, as the Rambam describes in the end of Hilchos Malachim, when Eliyahu will come, he's going to be Miyachai to identify who is an actual descendant of Aaron, who is a Levi, and to know who is going to be able to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. So Eliyahu Hanavi will renew Kohanim Miyuchasim in order to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. So prior to the arrival of Eliyahu and the Mashiach, seems the absence of Kohanim Yuchasim eliminates the possibility to offer the Karbanot. So an answer to that possibly could be as follows. This is a point that was made by Tzvihirsch Kalischer, and he was even supported by Rabbi Kiva Eger, by the Chassam Sofer. These are Rabbanim that were involved in the discussion in his time. And that is as follows. The Kohanim that we have today, for a Kohanim by virtue of family tradition, it's important to stress, and I cannot stress enough, that these Kohanim are definitely 100% Kohanim. I will prove to you that they are Kohanim. If someone had been at a Pigeon of Ben recently, you make a bracha when you give that money to the Kohen, because you're assuming the Kohen is definitely a Kohen. If you had any doubt the Kohen is a Kohen, you would not be allowed to perform the Pigeon of Ben. No bracha would be made. The Duchenin, coming Yontif soon, when a Kohen will go up and perform the Duchenin, he will actually make the bracha. Asher Kishem Zeshel Sal V'Elshel Aharon. If we would say that the Kohanim Chazaka are only possibly Kohanim, only Sovik Kohanim, they would not be making the bracha. In fact, the Aruch HaShulchan, one of the great halachic authorities, he was so upset when he heard that there are those who they don't want to make a bracha on Pigeon HaBen, there are those who, for Pigeon HaBen, to try to go as many Kohanim as possible. He said, God forbid to call into question the identity of our Kohanim. Kohanei Chazaka are definitely Kohanim. It's just for the Beit HaMikdash. We have a higher standard that you require positive knowledge of Kohanah, that they have to be Kohanim Miyuchasim. However, Tzvi'ah's Kalasher suggests that in the absence of Kohanim Miyuchasim, Kohanim Chazak can serve in the Beit HaMikdash, since they are definitely Kohanim. They are definitely Kohanim. We're not going to allow a Kohen today to marry a woman who's questionable. Maybe she's allowed to marry a Kohen, someone who's a machlokas, let's say someone, a woman whose mother is Jewish and father is not Jewish, big machlokas, whether she can marry a Kohen. We don't say, anyway, we're not so sure if someone is a Kohen. Absolutely not correct. The Kohanim Chazak are definitely Kohanim. And it goes to a huge point. How are we Jews? Most of us do not have a Yichus brief, do not have documentation to prove that we are Jews. We don't have documentation. How do we know? We know it from family traditions, passed on generation to generation. We know that a person is mukzak, a person is established as a Jew in the community. How he's a person is viewed as a Jew, so too a person is viewed, a person is a Kohen. And so if we know for sure, if you're going to cast doubt on the status of the Kohen, you're just casting doubt on our status as Jews. And therefore, Kohanim Chazak are definitely Kohanim. And perhaps they can serve if there are no Kohanim Yuchasim available. However, not everybody agrees with this approach of David Carliner, one of the great poskim and rabbanim of the early 20th century, in his Sheilas David, wrote that you need to have Kohanim Yuchasim and Kohanim Chazakah can never take their place. Okay, before we move on to the discussion of Big Day Kahuna, okay, Reb Simcha from St. Paul is going to decide to be the Kohen Gadol. Vote for the politicians. Well, I would hope not. In the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, it was the Romans who decided, at the end of the Beit HaMikdash, the Romans decided who would be served as the Beit HaMikdash. So we don't want to rely on that. Okay. Okay, now Mr. Weinstein is asking good stuff. Okay, you make a bracha on your talis, even though there's an opinion that says Tcheles Ma'akeh. Right, there is the opinion of Rebbe and the Baal HaMor. However, we paskin that you can, that Tcheles Eino Ma'akeh is the love, and you can make a bracha on the talis even though you don't have Tcheles on it. So therefore, you can, you definitely chayiv in talis. We don't follow the opinion of the Baal HaMor and Rebbe Yehuda. Now, you're asking, can DNA play a role in identifying Kohanim? I actually have discussed this. You can take our website. We have a full discussion of this, kultara.org, about the role of DNA in halacha to identify agunot. It's an interesting topic. Maybe, Rabbi Kelman, we can run a series maybe next year on technology in halacha. It's a nice topic, the role of DNA. Can DNA, is it acceptable in a Beis Din? So, www.kultora.org. And so you asked, it's a very nice question. I talk about DNA to identify the remains of a missing husband to permit a woman to remarry. It came up with a 9/11 agunot. But the question is, can DNA play a role in identifying Kohanim? I would doubt it, because all the DNA gene could show is that you have the DNA of Aaron HaKohen. It does not prove that someone is a legitimate Kohen and that maybe he's the son of a Grusha, someone along the line of Kohen married a woman they shouldn't have married, so maybe someone is a descendant of an improper marriage that way, and that would not come up in the DNA test. So apparently, the DNA, maybe that cannot identify, it would seem it would not be able to identify Kohanim. Okay, nice, at least positively, enough to the point that they can serve in the Beit HaMikdash. Because remember, if you can do the Avod in the Beit HaMikdash, and you're not allowed to, there's an Onesh Misa, Zar HaKarev Yimat. Anyone who offers a carb in the Beit HaMikdash, they're not a Kohen, they shouldn't be offering, they are in very, very big trouble. Okay, any other comments before we start talking about Big Day Kahuna? Okay, now next issue. The absence of the of Big Day Kahuna. Now, we could make our own Big Day Kahuna. And in fact, there's a fascinating organization called Machon HaMikdash, where they're actually building the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash today. And so the question is, can you, and I believe they're making Big Day Kahuna as well. So is there any way in which we can offer that we can have carbonate today Can we make Big Day Kahuna? Do we have all the components to make Big Day Kahuna? We'll certainly need Big Day Kahuna for the Kohen Gadol, for any Kohen to serve. But as you'll notice, if you noticed in the parshas that we read a few weeks ago in Parshas Tetzaveh, Parshas Truma, that for the special Tetzaveh, for the Big Day Kahuna, you need Tcheles. You need to have the, now Tcheles is a special dye, comes from a Chilazon, which perhaps is a snail, and it's used to dye the one of the strings, or one or a few more, depending on the opinion, strings of the tzitzit. It's also used in the it's used in the Beit HaMikdash as well in the Big Day Kahuna. So if we don't have Tcheles, and the Rambam already writes that for hundreds of years that we don't have Tcheles, then so how in the world are we going to have Big Day Kahuna? Now, one can respond, and I'm surprised no one has already typed in the response. Well, the many today believe that the Tcheles has been renewed. They argue that there's plenty of archaeological evidence to prove that the Tcheles that's made from the snail that's called the Murex trunculus, that's popular in certain circles in Eretz Yisrael, a little bit here in America, well, maybe that Tcheles is the authentic Tcheles. But the response to that is that even though I'm a big fan of this new Tcheles, and let's see, this, I'm going to put it up on the... See my tcheles that I wear on my tzitzis that a lot of people wear from the Murex trunculus. It's not coming out. Here we go. Does it come out that it's blue? Let me just stay here. You'll take a look at my tzitzis. Whoops. Sorry, that's... There we go. Here you have the white, and here's the one string. I'll have it. Doesn't come out so well. That's a tcheles. This is a tcheles right over here. As you see hanging down, the tcheles, the blue string. So I definitely wear it, but the Rav Herschel Schechter, one of my rabbeim at YU, Rav Herschel Schechter very much is enthusiastic about the tcheles, but even he writes that it's only subex tcheles. And therefore, it's for the tzitzis, he believes there's no downside to wearing tcheles on the tzitzis, but what about for the Big Day Kahuna? If you're not wearing proper Big Day Kahuna, the Kohen is Chayv Misa. You can't do the Avodah without, unless you're sure you have proper Big Day Kahuna. And now, Rav Sriyar's Kalasher was so enthusiastic about building the Beit HaMikdash, he said, no, just like by tzitzis, that you can wear tzitzis without the tcheles and the makav zalavan, you can have this white tzitzis without the tcheles. So too, for Big Day Kahuna, the tcheles namakav, the tcheles is preferable, but it's not absolutely indispensable. The only thing is that many of the Acharon disagree with this. It would seem that the tcheles for by tzitzis is separate, distinct from the white string. However, the tcheles is an integral part of the Big Day Kahuna, the Kohanim's clothes. And the Kohanim are not considered to be clothed properly. They cannot do the avodah unless they have that which is definitely tcheles. Now, not only that, do we know what's argaman? Do we know tolat shani? So this seems to be a serious impediment in offering carbonos because are we able today to manufacture proper Big Day Kahuna without the instruction from Moshe Rabbeinu? And when Mashiach comes, there'll be Tchias HaMeishnim and Aaron and Moshe and Aaron. They told us in Pesach, in the end of the 10th parak. They told us that when Mashiach will come, Moshe and Aaron will be back. It's a lot of direction from none other than Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron about how to recover the Tcheles, how the Agaman and Tolat Shani. But in the absence of Tchias HaMeitim, how are we going to be able to reconstruct the proper Big Day Kahuna? Okay, Adkan for this section. Before I move on to the topic of Shkalim, let's hear, anybody have any thoughts, comments? Okay, ready to move on to the next topic. All right, so we've talked about offering carbon in a state of tumah. We've talked about identifying Kohanim, Big Day Kahuna in the absence of Tcheles. Now, another argument that's made by Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden was a great authority of the 18th century. And Rav Yaakov Emden noted that how can we build the Beit HaMikdash today? We don't have Shkolim. We just had Parsha Shkolim. The the Kami L'Kabanot have to be offered with money donated by Am Yisrael for the everyone has to bring half a shekel. So how can you have a half a shekel? I mean, so how can you have the bring Kabanot, community Kabanot, if people haven't given the shekelim? So Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a response to this. One of the great authorities, he died in 1986. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that, no, that's not an impediment. He says that what you could do is you could take money and you could be mezakeh and you can acquire on behalf of all of Am Yisrael, for all the Jews, and that money would belong to Am Yisrael, just like the Shkalim did, and with that money that belongs to all of Am Yisrael, you can bring Karbanot. So that would not necessarily be an impediment. Another impediment that Rabbi Yaakov Emdin tries to prove, that is the lack of Mamado. What are Mamado? Mamado are down at the beginning of the baseball season, you can appreciate it, that Lahavdil, that in the Beit HaMikdash, not just Kohanim have their shifts to be a vote, the Levim have their shifts to be a vote, the Jewish people also. The Jewish people engage in Mamadot, that we sort of serve as the fans for the Beit HaMikdash. Brochem HaDras Melech, the more the better. That we don't just, the carbon seed was not just brought for the community without the presence of anyone from the community, but Am Yisrael would be broken up into 24 groups, and every 24 weeks we'd have a turn in which we'd go to the Beit HaMikdash, and we'd be the fans, we'd stand around the Beit HaMikdash and add dignity to the proceedings of the Beit HaMikdash by the fact that we stand there and we have, and we're showing that we're concerned and we love it. Obviously, that's what fans of the sports, that's also part of the game. In a box score, they'll tell you how many fans were present. That's part of the game, which is the number of the fans. And similarly, the Mamadol, Avdil, though, but in the holy context, that the Beit HaMikdash, we need to have Mamadot, all of Am Yisrael present, at least at some time, when the Karban Sibor and the communal sacrifices are offered. Now today we don't have a list of Mamadot, how are we going to organize Am Yisrael to Mamadot? So argued Rav Yaakov Emdin. However, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach tried to bring proofs that, no, you can have the Beit HaMikdash can function even without Mamadot. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next topic. And that is the absence of offering Karbanot even without the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, we'll move on after we've had an opportunity for people to give their insights. Anybody? Any of our chevra want to say something? Comment? Okay, ready to move on to the next topic. This is huge. This is a huge topic. It's a beautiful point. The Mishnah in Adios, Perkas Mishnah Vav. Quotes Rabbi Yeshua saying the following testimony. Shamati, I've heard, Shemakrin al-Pishen Shambayis, that we're allowed to offer a Karbanot even though there's no Beit HaMikdash. Okay, so no Beit HaMikdash, let's bring a Karban. Where? On the Mizbeach. Where do we see this from? In Bayit Sheni, the first steps of Bayit Sheni is Korash gave us permission to build a Beit HaMikdash. What was the only thing they were able to do during Korash's time? We were able to put up the Mizbeach. Wasn't the most fancy of the mizbechot. We were able to put up a mizbeach. We were very poor at that point, but nonetheless, we put up a mizbeach. We offered Karbanot similarly. David started off with building the Beit HaMikdash with the mizbeach. He started off with, even though his son Shlomo was the one that had to build it, we find the end of Sefer Shmuel that David is actually starting off the Beit HaMikdash with building the Mizbech, and perhaps the offering Karbanot there as well. Okay, now, an interesting tantalizing idea. Maybe we can bring the Karban Pesach this coming April, this coming two and a half weeks, because we see we can offer a Karban even though we don't have the Beit HaMikdash. But what's the only problem? The only problem is that you still need a Mizbeach, and the Mizbeach has to be perfectly positioned. The Rambam writes about the Mizbeach, Mechuvan Hu B'Yoser, it's exceptionally well positioned, precisely positioned. And in fact, that's one of the reasons the Gemara in Zvachim, and Daf Samach Beis Menachem says that by Shein, they needed a Navi to tell us exactly where the Mizbeach would be built. How can we build the Mizbeach without guidance from the Navi? So that's the response given by Rav Kalsher is, okay, Chacham Adif Min Avi, as this Weinstein pointed out, and that we'll have guidance from great Talmid Chachamim, the greatest of the Talmid Chachamim of the world, and we will, that perhaps can substitute for prophetic guidance. Right? Maybe that's what one could say. All right, but let's take a look here at the debate between Rav Kalsher and Rav Moshe Sternbach. Rav Kalsher, again, so enthusiastic about building Beis Hamikdash. He says it can happen. He wrote so much. And he corresponds with all the great rabbis in Europe at his time. And the Tzvi Kalsher said that we can offer Karbonot even without the Beis Hamikdash. Why? Since we can build the Beit HaMikdash even without the guidance of a Navi. So argued Rav Kalsher. Why? He makes the following argument. He points out that in the time of Beit Sheni, they didn't have a detailed description of how the Beit HaMikdash looked like we have today in Maseches Midos, one of the 63 tractates of the Talmud. Midos describes at length the Beit HaMikdash. And argue Rav Kalsher, fine. Based on Mishnayos and Midos, you should be able to figure out where to put the Mizbeach, where to exactly position it, because the Mishnayos and Midos tell us where they are, and all we have to do is follow those guidelines and know exactly where to position the Beit HaMikdash. The only thing Rosh Sternbach says, that doesn't make sense, that, as Mr. Weinstein said, oh, I hear what you're saying, right. Yeah, sure, Tom's saying, right, I hear what you're saying, right. So, your statement, Mr. Weinstein, is that as much as we have to try as much as we can. If you have a Navi available, great. If you don't have a Navi available, it doesn't mean you can't build the Mizbeach, right? I hear Shalatan saying. And, but Rav Kalsher says, look, we can figure it out from the Mishnayos, Midos. The only thing is that Rav Moshe Sternbach, one of the great rabbis today, Mishalayim, older Rav, Rav Sternbach writes that is very nice today. Maybe we don't need a Navi because you have Maseches Midos. But what does Maseches Midos use? It uses which measurements? Cubits, amos. Do we know exactly what an amma is? There's so much machlokas. You open up the Encyclopedia Talmud and you'll see how many various opinions there are about amos. So we didn't even know that. It's cute. It's not even close that, so we're not able to figure out from Maseches Midos where exactly the position of the Mizbeach, because, yes, the Mishnayos give the measurements in Amos, and there's a Machlokas, what is an Amma? So how are we going to figure out, based on the Maseches Midos, of where exactly to position the Mizbeach? If we don't have the tools, we don't even know what an amma is. We know what the Mishnah means when it's telling us the location of the Mishkan. And, all right, it's a good question, interesting issues. Do we necessarily need to have the Navi to tell us precisely where the Beit HaMikdash where the Mizbeach should be offered? Okay? Now, finally, the Rambam writes, Malachim, that the Mashiach, not only we mentioned before, will be the one who will rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, but also, in his time, the Rambam says, the Karbonot will be renewed. What does that seem to imply? No Karbonot before Mashiach, maybe because we're unable to overcome all these halachic obstacles. And in fact, also Rav Soloveitchik, I specifically spoke to Rav Soloveitchik, he said that it's not a time for Karbonot, it's not a time for the Beit HaMikdash, because the Rambam that says the Mashiach is the one that brings Kavanah. But Rav Kook, on the other hand, at least in some places, at least raised the possibility that we can have Kavanah even before the Beit HaMikdash, based on the Yerushalmi in Matzah Sheni, Parakeh, Halacha Beis, that we've discussed earlier in this year. So, there is possible room to disagree with the Rambam on this. Okay? Any other questions or comments? I think I responded to the question about the Rav. The Rav was not looking forward to Karbonot pre-Mashiach. No, he felt the Mashiach is the one to build the Karbonot, is the one to offer Karbanot, the ones to renew the Karbanot, and to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Any other comments? Okay, there's those that want to claim that when the Mashiach comes, that we're going to actually offer not Karbanot, but we're going to, not animal Karbanot, that there will be plant Karbanot, plant sacrifices, and we'll be vegetarians. It's an interesting approach, and Rav Kook actually argued that. But, however, it would seem that the Rambam does not hold that. The Rambam presents all the dinim of Karbanot, and in the Mishnah Torah of Karbanot, the Beit HaMikdash, and nowhere at all does the Rambam say that, when the Mashiach comes, the Karbanot will be out of plants and not out of animals. So it seems the Rambam would definitely hold that there will be Karbanot, animal Karbanot, even the days of Mashiach. Oh, I understand what you're saying. The Rambam, based on the Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim, reason for Karbanot seems to be that it's coming to debunk, to rebut the views or to wean Bnei Yisrael off of Avodah Zarah. So if that's the case, when Jews are not so enthusiastic about Avodah Zarah, maybe there's no need for Karbanot. Okay, that Rambam, there's a lot to talk about, a ton of discussion. Let's suffice it to say that even according to the Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim, we're going to have a Beit HaMikdash, and there will be Karbanot from animals. Okay, Mr. Weinstein's asking, okay, we make Kiddush, we build Sukkot, we wear Tzitzit, and so since the fact that we don't know what an Amma is, why should be a recipe for halacha paralysis? So for two things, good question. So the first thing is that, right, that's right, no one suggests that Tzitzit must share the pen, right. So I have two responses to that. First of all, the Mizbeach is unusual that the Rambam writes, the makom mizbeach mechuvan hu biyoter. It is very, very precise. Something that the Torah is very, very marked with them, that the mizbeach should be in the exact same place. Now, how do we figure out where they are and exactly how to build the mizbeach? That's based on Masechus Midot, which tells us the distance from the walls of the Azara where to place the Mizbeach. And one could say we don't know exactly what an Amma is, so we can't base our determination of the placement of the Mizbeach based on the second Midot, when we're not sure what an Amma is. Now you could say, well, what about Sukkot and Tzitzit? So I've seen Rabban, a Rav in Brooklyn, very cautious Rav, his name is Rafael Cohen, he writes that he thinks that, and I've seen in some Rabbanim that when they make an Eruv for an Amma, they'll go strict in both directions. They'll take the smallest amount, and the largest amount, they try to be machmir for both. They try to be machmir the Chazanish, large shear, and Avram Chaim Nod's small shear. So there's a way to certainly to be able to make tzitzis and sukkah, and a sukkah, and an Eruv, without resolving the dispute over the size of the Amma, because you're just going to be machmir in both directions, so you can circumvent the machlokas. Okay, all right, it's an interesting point. I hear you saying, what's that? That's not called being a positive. All right, well, you know. Look, some people hold that you can, and I know as far as Erevin, Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that you follow Rav Moshe Feinstein's shear for an Amma. But yeah, when you're dealing with the Beit HaMikdash, where there's a misstep that we're punished with kares, l'chora, we have to know exactly what the Amma is. But I know what you're saying based on Rav Kook says. Rav Kook makes the argument is that, look, let's, Rav Kook very much believed, yes, we have all these disputes. He seems to argue in certain places that we should build the Beit HaMikdash, we should offer Karbanot even before the Mashiach comes. And he says, why, we have all these disputes, so the Rabbanim today should resolve it. Okay. Alright, let's go now to a few more issues. And and that is the issues of unresolved disputes, something that we were just hinting on today. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger, already in his discussions with the Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, points out that who says we can offer a karbanot in the Beit HaMikdash today? Because we quoted the Mishnah from Rabbi Yeshua. The Rabbi Yeshua says that we can offer karbanot today even if they don't have a Beit HaMikdash, because the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash remains even after the Korban Beit Rishon and Sheni. Nonetheless, the Kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash remains. It is permanent. But who says that we agree that the Ravid in Hilchos Beis Bechira and Perek Vav, the Ravid disagrees? The Rav says, yes, he rules like that Mishnah, and that the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash applies at all times. The Ravid disagrees. The point of the Ravid, we can't offer Kabbalah in the Beit HaMikdash before it's being sanctified in the time of Mashiach. It doesn't have that Kedusha. So we can't offer a korban in Har Bayit. This does not have kedusha. This manazeh does not have that special sanctity that would allow bringing korbanot. And you'll say, well, why don't we just decide we'll follow the opinion of the Rambam? And Rabbi Akiva Eiger felt, look, we cannot resolve this issue. We don't have the tools to be able to resolve this issue between the Rambam and the Ravad. Okay, and then just another example that Rabbanan like to point out is that just to show that we're a little bit halacha gridlock because of these unresolved halacha disputes, we have an interesting machlokes regarding the Karban Pesach between the Rambam and the Ravid. The question is as follows. We know the Karban Pesach is supposed to be roasted whole. On the other hand, we know that we're not allowed to eat the Gid and Hashem. So do you roast the lamb with the Gid and Hashem, with its sinew vein that does... This is the Gid and Hashem, the forbidden part of the animal, has to be removed. Do you remove it after you cook the Karban Pesach or beforehand? Very big machlokas. And Rambam says, no, you don't remove it. You have to cook the Karban Pesach with the Gid and Hashem already intact, because the Karban has to be whole. Where the Ravid says, no. How in the world can you cook the Karban Pesach with a Gid and Hashem? Even writes, the Ravid goes crazy and he says that if he'd see a Karban Pesach cooked by the Rambam standards, he would take it and he'd throw it out. He would say it's pusel. He would say it's treif, because you're cooking something treif with it. How can you cook the Karban Pesach with a Gid and Hashem still inside? But the Rambam will say about the Ravid, how can you remove a Gid and Hashem? Now the Karban Pesach becomes invalidated because it's not whole. So how do you resolve each one's Karban Pesach? The Ravid's will say the Rambam is Karban Pesach is treif, and the Rambam will say the Ravid's Karban Pesach is chaser, is not complete, is not whole, and therefore cannot be offered as a Karban Pesach. Very interesting point, which to show you that we seem to have unresolved issues. And Rav Moshe Sternbach argues that if Rabbi Akiva Eiger wasn't able to resolve the dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid, how much more so today, we were not able to resolve the disputes between the Rambam and the Ravid. However, Rav Kook believes that, no, okay, we should kind of, let's resolve the issues. And one perhaps could argue that, look, in regard to the new issues that have come up in our day, such as Shemitah, right? And Kilayim, how to resolve halachic issues in regard to Shemitah and Kilayim? You look at that, you use halachic tools. The Chazon Ish resolved many issues when it comes to Shemitah, when it comes to Trumas and Masros. So if we're able to resolve these issues, even though we don't have the Shulchan Aruch treating the rules of Shemitah of Eretz Yisrael, and nevertheless, if we can resolve this issue, Rav Kook says, look, we have to take responsibility, and just as we resolve the Shemitah issues, so that we can resolve and the Shumas and Masros, Kilayim, all these new issues, the Shulchan Aruch really doesn't treat so in depth, and we're able to resolve it, so too today we should resolve these issues. I hear you. So Mr. Weinstein, I think the answer is we live halachic lives because a lot of times, how do we resolve these issues? We resolve these issues because we have minhagim. We We have traditions from generation to generation. We have minhagim, we have machlokas about how to tie tzitzit, but we have minhagim how to tie it. So some, one of the reasons, some rabbanim, I know Rav Tainitz from Elizabeth, was one of the reasons why he didn't like wearing the, putting the tashin tcheles onto the new tcheles, onto the tzitzit, as he points out, is that we don't have tradition. How do we know the proper way in which to tie the tzitzit? And so therefore he felt it was not a good idea to put on the tcheles. Other rabbanim felt that, no, like Rav Shaftar feels, no, it can resolve the issues. If you learn uphill of tzitzit very, very well, you can resolve the issues. Right, I hear you, Mr. Weinstein. I hear you, right. We don't have a Masorah about opening doors on Shabbos, right? We have so many, all these new hotels, we don't have a Masorah about electric razors, right? I hear you. That's Rav Cook's approach. Other Rabbanim are a little bit more bold. Other Rabbanim are conservative, very, very conservative. And they feel that, especially when it comes to the base of Migdash, that we don't want to take any chances. Maybe tzitzis, take some chances with the tzchelos. What's the downside about the way that we tie it? It's still not ma'akev. That doesn't prevent the ultimate fulfillment of the basic fulfillment of the mitzvah of tzitzis. So therefore, we can take chances in resolving the issues. And Shemitah the Rabbanim today, I may. So therefore, that we can resolve issues. But Beit Midash, where if we make a mistake, there's kares. So some Rabbanim feel that we can be bold. Other Rabbanim say that no, we should not be so bold. All right, let's move towards the conclusion. It's getting a little late. What about the? Is there a Sarah Shavet? Right. No. Mr. Weinstein is arguing that just like we resolve the issues regarding refrigerators on Shabbos, so too we resolve the issues regarding the Beit HaMikdash. Right. Good point. Interesting point. Now, a couple of minor issues, and then major issues, and we'll conclude. What about the presence of the Muslim mosque, or the Dome of the Rock? So Rabbi Eliezer Rodenberg, the Sitz Eliezer, writes that a reason we can't have the Beit HaMikdash is the presence of the Dome of the Rock. We can't bring the carbon in a place where non-Jews worship. And it's interesting, Rabbi Rodenberg, believe it or not, actually believes we should not be davening the Matzah Machpelah. You cannot have an area which is both serves as a prayer for non-Jews as well as for Jews. So too, he felt similarly that you cannot have you can't have karbanos on the Har HaBayin, and it's a disgrace to the karbanos to offer karbanos when non-Jews use the Har HaBayin as a place for prayer, and they go there, that's for their tumah. So it's not appropriate. It would be degrading to the karbanos. And then, of course, the real issue is that we understand that today, if we would offer a karban, that we're risking the outbreak of war, that the outrage would be great, the films of the shots of Jews offering karban on our bayit would be shown on Al Jazeera, that an Arab street would go crazy. And then Rav Itamar Rahatig, a very chashuv Rav in Eretz Yisrael, has written that we do not find anywhere that we are required to risk our lives in order to offer karbanot. So we certainly would have to refrain from building the Beit HaMikdash today, or even offering karbanot, or building the Mizbeach today, because doing so would be a tremendous risk. And I know people, I don't endorse it, I know people that walk around Har HaBayit, and the Arabs are very mocked not to let the Jews even pray a little bit, no davening. And so if the Arabs are not going to allow even any little davening on Har HaBayit, and they say only Arabs davening, only Muslims davening, and not Jews, so certainly to offer karbanot, that's would inflame the Arab street, and not a good idea if we want to avoid war. But the bottom line is that the most important thing I think I want to get out of tonight is as follows, is that even though the bottom line is that we really can't build a Beit HaMikdash, yes, a minority view will tell you that we should build a Beit HaMikdash even before the Mashiach comes today. But the bottom line is that the Beit HaMikdash is, and the most important thing is that we are concerned about the Beit HaMikdash. We learn this topic. And the very learning of this topic is a great source, a great merit for Am Yisrael, that we are concerned about the Beit HaMikdash, and that's something that we have to make sure. The Torah says that we're so Drishat Zion, that we pay attention to the Beit HaMikdash, and right? We should be concerned about the Beit HaMikdash and concerned about the possibilities. And even if we're not able to build the Beit HaMikdash, this is the very discussion itself is a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, great sanctification of Hashem to show you that we very much desire to build the Beit HaMikdash, and may Hashem bring those desires to a reality. We should be able to offer a Karbanot, offer and have a Beit HaMikdash, B'nei Rav Yameinu, and hopefully even before this Pesach, we should be able to bring the Karban Pesach. All right, I'll take some comments. I hear you, right. Right, a Jewish presence seems to inflame the Arab street, right? I hear you. It's not easy living together with Arabs in the Middle East. Not an easy thing. Okay. Do we have any more comments or thoughts?
Rabbi, just fine about the Mashrita. I really think that anyone who really wants to, I mean, there's one thing about wanting to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, and I have no problem having Mashiach when he comes do that. But if Mashiach wants to decide that we have Karbanot again, animal Karbanot anyway, that we'll have to live with it then. But I think that anyone who wants to have Karbanot ought to spend a few hours in a Mashrita, especially with Parot, and then decide whether it is. I've seen it. It sometimes makes me wish I was a vegetarian, which I'm not. But it's really what I wonder whether we haven't really gone to a higher plateau with Korbanot Sifateinu than really being homesick for blood flowing in the streets. Because that's what we see at the Rosh Chita.
Right. I hear you, but look, you're raising a good issue. Karbanot seems to be very foreign to us. What I would suggest is a very nice book written by a friend of mine, Rabbi Josh Berman, on the Beit HaMikdash and about Karbanot that will give you a different perspective on Karbanot. It's very, especially now leaning Sefer Yikra, it's a very worthwhile read. I don't know if it's available, but I think the book is called The Temple, and Rabbi Joshua Berman is printed by Aronson. Very, very fine book.
I understand that, you know, that we, the intent was to transfer that instead of our panels. I understand the Hashkafa behind it. That's not what I'm suggesting.
Right.
I'm just suggesting that maybe, like the Rambam says, we move beyond that. And really, go to a Mashrita, spend some time there, look at what goes on there, and then suggest, again, like I suggested once before, is that really what we want? Is that really what we want the world to see about us today?
Right.
Again, if Mashiach comes, I'm all in favor. And as far as Dov's comment, maybe it's time to rethink our tefillot. Our tefillot have changed over years. There are changes. Much of what our pulchan is in the Beit Knesset has been developed over many years and has different changes. Maybe it is time to rethink it. But again, I'm willing to leave it up to Mashiach, you know. Much of the discussions in the Talmud, especially in Gemara Bavli, were theoretical ones. They weren't practical ones that anyone thought that they were going to put them, enforce them at the time. And that was probably also why the reason that the Talmud Yerushalmi has discussions on the Sechtot that the Talmud probably never had, because it was they didn't see it as a major concern. While the Yerushalmi had
the Bavli
interested in different types of.
Rabbis, it's interesting that the Bavli
really
is the
why they chose these over others to have length, you know, to have the long Gemaras. But you know,
right.
I'm just suggesting.
But it's interesting though.
Go to the Mashrita, look, see if what it's like. See the blood flowing. See the animals. At least when I've seen it, it made me. I wish I never had meat in the first place. I wouldn't have the tava.
Right. So I would okay. So first of all, I just took a comment on the RCA does not have a sitter which already made changes, but yeah, right, the RA, right, exactly, right, not the Rabbinical Council of America, the Rabbinical Assembly, right, okay. Orthodox thought, we don't, we definitely believe that the Karbanot And it's interesting that the Bavli focuses, it does not talk about many of the mitzvahs of Sfiras Baretz, but it speaks about Karbanot. Certainly the Bavli is very focused on Karbanot, and very much looking forward to Karbanot. And we want there to be Karbanot. Okay, I understand this looks foreign to us, but nevertheless, you know, that's, the Torah is forever. You know, look, maybe Rav Kook is right, maybe the Mashiach will tell us, Rav Kook, who holds that it's correct that they use plants. But I'm not so expecting that to happen, because most of the Rabbanim don't seem to believe in that. And it's not that we have to adjust the Torah, but it's that the Orthodox believe is that it's not that we don't believe in adjusting the Torah, we believe in adjusting ourselves. So it's an interesting exchange. Any other comments? Okay, I think I thank everyone for joining us for this wonderful series and this evening. Yeshkach, thank you, Michael. Thank you. It's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful group to learn with. And Yeshkach to Rabbi Kalman, to all the people at Torah Motion, all the people involved with making this tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Yeshkach to all those involved. Thank you for your wonderful comments. And these thank you, thank all of you. And we're going to be actually having a shiur this coming Tuesday night on Hilchos Pesach. We'll talk about some interesting topics, including the topic of inviting non-Shomer Shabbos to non-observant Jews to your house for the Seder, about having them driving. We'll see various opinions on this topic, very interesting and very, very important topics. About the Seder. And Yasha Koch, everyone should have should be a wonderful week and a Chodesh Nisan Tov, a Chodesh Geula, Shmina Geula from Am Yisrael. Have a very, very good night, everyone.